Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and I am joined finally, after a long absence, by my wife, Sarah. Welcome back to the show, Sarah.
I'm so excited.
It's been too long.
Too long.
You realize you haven't been on the show since August. It's now pretty much March.
It is next year.
You haven't been on the show since 2019.
It's been a while.
So I'm very delighted to have you back. And I'm very delighted just to be on the Nerd Party Network in general, hanging out with the likes of Filibuster, Aggressive Negotiations, A24 Project, Nerd Nuptial, SETI Alpha 3, Babel for 5. There is a lot. I named some of them. There are more than that. So go over to thenerdparty.com, check them out, follow us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party, like the Instagram at the Nerd Party, and like the Facebook page, which is also the Nerd Party. But enough about the Nerd Party. Enough, I say. We're here to talk about a movie called Brick, a movie directed, written and directed by Rian Johnson, who Sarah is smiling.
I am smiling.
I don't know if the technology is available for our audience to see the smile, but she is smiling. Sarah has been a big Rian Johnson fan for longer, I think, than I've been a Rian Johnson fan.
I believe so.
Because I didn't get into Rian Johnson until Breaking Bad.
Right.
Which isn't even really, it's totally, he brings his own style and aesthetic to aesthetic.
Aesthetic.
I just made that a completely different word. He brings his own style and aesthetic to Breaking Bad, but he's definitely playing a part in a larger whole, not necessarily doing something that's his own creation. But I think the first movie I saw of his was Looper. And I think that was one of the first movies you and I saw in the theater together.
Yes, I think you're right.
Yeah, but you have been a fan of his since Brick, which came out in 2006.
Yeah.
And it's his first movie. Do you remember the first time you saw this movie?
I saw it in theaters.
You saw this in theaters?
Yeah. And I think it might have been earlier than 2006, maybe 2005. No, you're right.
It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival, which, by the way, I just covered. If you want to check out my coverage, it's all available wherever you listen to podcasts. But yeah, it was January 21st, 2005.
Yeah, because I remember I had graduated high school going into college. It was that time of my life.
And I'm double checking now.
Good time of the life.
So yeah, 2005, I was also graduating from high school that year. So, okay. And then it was April. So it wasn't released. Here's the thing. So it did premiere in 2005, but it wasn't released until April 7th, 2006.
Okay. Then I saw it in 2006.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what inspired, was it Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
So it was a couple things. That was a big one.
As it should be.
I have had just this obsession. I just love him. I think he's great.
Oh, you should tell the story of...
Wait, hold on. Which story?
The story of... Okay. Maybe I should tell the story since I've paid witness to it.
Oh.
But we were asleep and I woke up because Sarah sleep talks every so often. And in this particular case, she was kind of laughing and giggling and she just went, oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh, no.
And in her sleep said, oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which frankly, I wasn't that insulted by because I've had dreams involving JGL.
That's what
us true fans call him. But I thought it was so funny that you used his full name. Oh, Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
I mean, respect, okay?
So this is something that I'm very familiar with your love
for
him.
You knew early on in our relationship that you had some stiff competition.
I did.
Yeah.
But I'm okay with that because you also have stiff competition from Mr. Levitt.
That's true.
Mr. Gordon-Levitt.
Is it Gordon-Levitt or Gordon-Levitt? I don't think there
These
is a dash
things
anywhere.
That Wikipedia should.
It's just
no, there is. It is Gordon-Levitt.
Oh.
I guess one of us is the bigger fan. One of us is dreaming about him a little bit more than the other.
I'm done.
You're done. All right. But you loved Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
No, I loved him. I wanted to. I can't remember the order of things, but I probably would have seen it regardless because I really loved him. I had recently seen a movie called
Angels in the Outfield.
Mysterious Skin, which is fantastic. And he's just wonderful. It's I think it's a pretty small movie.
Man, look at that hair.
Yeah, he's young in that. Styling. I don't know his age, but he's fairly young. So I had seen that. I also was, I believe I was in college for the first semester. So it was brand new world. I had taken a mystery in literature class, something like that. Okay. I don't know. I didn't like to take real classes. So it was like anything with reading and TV, sign me up. I'm a crime junkie. So yes. That's my jam. So we had read The Big Sleep by Raymond Chandler. And one of my classmates was like, if you love that book, which I did, you need to check out this movie Brick. And I did, and I loved it. And there are a lot of parallels, and it's all wonderful. The book and the movie. They're not based upon each other, but there's...
Big Sleep is a big inspiration.
I would say so, yeah. I don't know if Rian Johnson has said that, but... And then even seeing his new film, you can kind of see his, like, hard-boiled detective type of mystery inspiration. So that is how I saw it.
And then you were already a fan. So I remember hearing about Brick from, like, there was a girl I had a crush on, and it was... I remember she loved this movie.
Yeah.
Like, she was like, you're going to film school? You should watch Brick. Oh. It's the best movie ever. And I was like, okay, that sounds good. I've never heard of it. But that was my first exposure to it, was like, I should probably watch this so I can make out with this girl.
Yeah.
It never happened.
How did that go?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
It didn't. That's the best part. But Brick has always been in the background of my life. It just keeps popping up because between you, but also like, film fans and friends of mine, like friends in film school, but everybody, people used to showcase their street cred when it came to film.
Posers.
It was like, oh, but have you seen Brick?
Bunch of posers.
Especially because, I went to film school in 2007, like 2007 to 2010.
Okay. So this is right
so
after.
So it was right when this movie came out. So it was like a small indie movie. Definitely like you had some street cred if you'd seen it. So I think a lot of my film school peers had that. But like I said, my first exposure, I think, to Rian Johnson was The Fly, the episode of Breaking Bad, which I thought was amazing.
So good.
And then I learned more about Rian Johnson. Like, oh, he's like, he just kind of came in and was a guest director. He typically does films. And I the first movie I saw of his was Looper.
Yeah.
And which I enjoyed. I would love to watch that again. Yeah. I remember we both were kind of like, that was good. And
it's not one of my favorites, but I wouldn't call it bad by any stretch or anything like that.
No, not at all. Not at all. So I enjoyed it. And then, again, that would have been probably a prime time to go back and watch Brick, but I didn't. But then he went and directed Ozymandias, probably the best episode of Breaking Bad. So again, I was like...
On board by then.
Yeah, I was toting myself as like, oh yeah, I'm a huge Rian Johnson fan, having seen two episodes he directed for Breaking Bad.
I think that's
Looper.
Fair. Yeah.
But it's true. And you know what I always admired about Rian Johnson was I remember watching the behind the scenes on the Blu-ray of Breaking Bad, the final season, watching him direct actors and how sensitive he was and how he was very in tune with their emotions. Like he was directing a scene with Anna Gunn, who plays Skyler, Walt's wife, and it's the scene where this is going to spoil Breaking Bad, so maybe skip ahead a few minutes or so, but it's the scene where Walt drives off with Holly, I think it's
the baby.
I need to watch Breaking Bad again. It's been too long. But he drives off with the baby, and she's kind of like screaming after him, and she couldn't get to that emotional point.
Yeah.
And there's some great footage of Rian Johnson just talking to her and kind of coaching her through it, and her finally reaching that breaking point, and then they cut and he like runs in and he just kind of puts his arm around her and comforts her, and I was like, I really like this. This is really lovely to watch this and watch him, the way he comforts actors and nourishes them. And you see it in films like Knives Out, which is incredible, just the way he can assemble these ensembles.
I wish you could see what I see. It's Sean holding our cat, trying to coddle her.
Trying to comfort her. Not unlike the way Rian Johnson comforts Anna Gunn. Because for some reason she knows we're recording.
She looks miserable.
She's miserable right now. Yeah, so.
Yes.
But I just remember being really struck by that and thinking, this guy seems very sensitive and also seems like a really like a genuine good person. That feeling, that perception of him was amplified by the way he handled the response to The Last Jedi.
Absolutely.
Talk about like
class,
the grace of the gods, yeah, like what something he's, yeah, to handle the vitriol and the insane, mm-hmm, hatred that was thrown at him by Star Wars fans. That was incredible. The way he would handle it gracefully and diffuse situations and just deal with it. And all the crap he had to put up with when the movie itself was like really good.
And made money
and was considered, not by me, but considered by many to be like the best Star Wars movie, yeah, since Empire. Though to be fair, I might actually, now that I think about it, I might actually agree. But that's all to say, Brick feels like an appropriate movie to watch because especially we saw Knives Out and, mm-hmm, loved it. We both loved it. And it was just like, I should go back and watch Brick.
Yeah. Well, this movie really feels like where it all began if you're a fan of Knives Out. That's what I think. Because it just felt like I got a lot of...
the same thing.
A lot of the same thing. All of the good stuff.
Because it's,
you
a
know,
mystery, right?
Yeah. It's a mystery. It's like kind of
high
like...
school.
Yeah. It's like, think of like a LA noir detective novel, but put it in... like the rich suburbs of an LA high school, but you still get a lot of the gritty, seedy underbelly of Los Angeles. But it's just wonderful.
That's really all I know. I don't know anything about it. I know it's like a murder mystery, mm-hmm, and that
it's
the
a
guy's
whodunit.
Girlfriend is murdered, mm-hmm, and he's like trying to figure it out. And that's really all.
And
I know.
Emily DeRaven is in it, and I also really loved her from her time on the TV show Roswell, which I watched when I was in high school. I can't remember when, but somewhere in that time. And it was, I don't know, one of her earlier films too. So they were both like my two people. It's like I love them. I can't wait to see. And they're both just excellent in this film.
Oh, great. So what else? I mean, I'm excited to watch it. I'm genuinely, like, yeah, been wanting to watch it for a while.
We've been talking about it for years.
We've been talking
years,
about it for, since
years.
Last year at least.
Yeah,
since
I'm really excited.
Since December 2019.
And I haven't
so
seen it in 6-7 years. I mean, I don't think so. It's been a while. I watched it a ton of times between like 2006 and maybe 2010, but I really haven't seen it recently.
So this will be fun for both,
yeah,
of us.
Yeah,
you'll
absolutely
rediscover it. I'll discover it for the first time.
Yeah.
It's going to be great. Let's watch this movie.
Now available to own on video cassette.
All right, and we're back. Sarah, I really enjoyed this movie.
You did?
And what was amazing to me about it.
Did you see my shocked face?
Yeah.
Because you were so quiet, I thought you
didn't. Well, I'll tell you this much. This is one of the rare examples of a movie where about 30, 40 minutes in, I thought, I don't like this. Like,
really?
I don't like it. Yeah. I think the movie has some pretty big issues, such as it is very hard to follow.
100%.
The dialogue is almost indecipherable. The entire movie, I was like, I don't know what these people are saying.
Yeah.
And I think the thing was, I really enjoyed it. As the movie goes on, and you kind of find its rhythm and you start to feel it out a little bit, I started to feel like I understood what Johnson was going for.
Yeah.
It also helped that the movie gets a little goofy about midway through, mm-hmm, when they start to introduce like Tug and what's the other guy's name?
The pen.
So the pen is like when it starts
like
to get really stylized, yeah, like that, I was like, okay, so it's sort of tongue in cheek,
yeah,
too. Because the first 30 minutes of the movie, I was like, this feels like a movie that was made by a young filmmaker who wants to be taken very seriously. It was very melodramatic. It was just shot in this kind of grim, like lots of like gray. And I admired the style. I was like, I admire Johnson's aesthetic. He's clearly got chops, but the writing is just very like, it just felt a little too on the nose and a little too... like it was just, it felt fake. So I was very like, I don't really like this. And it feels so self-serious. Like it was like basically somebody who wanted to be taken seriously as a filmmaker and was desperate to be taken seriously as a filmmaker. The dialogue felt too smart at times and a little too stylized. And I wasn't into it. And then, like I said, once it started to open up a little bit and they started to open up the world and it just became really zany. I think the moment the film won me over was the scene with the pin at his table, at the kitchen table with his mom.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I think I'm starting to understand.
And like the rooster pitcher and yes. all the scenes.
And the mom's like, I got apple juice. You want yeah. apple juice? Here you go.
You don't want milk. You already had it on your cornflakes. Yes.
And I started, when the film starts to loosen up as it goes on. Mm-hmm. And that's when it started to mesh with me.
Yeah.
But I wanted to ask you, was it difficult for you? Because you loved the movie right off the bat.
I loved it right off the bat.
Was it difficult to understand what was happening? Because I still don't fully know what happened in this movie.
So I'm trying to remember, because I've seen this movie so many times. The first time, I think I had a similar reaction, but I was just so invested and fascinated by these characters and how they all, it's just like a perfect puzzle piece, and it seems so complicated and convoluted, but if you break it down, and let's watch this movie 10 more times and then talk about okay, it seriously right. though, because everything fits perfectly. Yeah. Like
what
it's
you were
all
saying about
up.
Like oh,
it is.
It's very clear that Johnson loves this stuff.
Yes,
he
like whodunit and like every little you know he alludes to. I don't know. It's just I'm a fangirl. I can't help it.
It feels like it's perfected in Knives Out because the entertainment value is there, and he does a much he gets better as a filmmaker at explaining in
I
a way
agree.
That doesn't feel like you're hitting the audience over the head, but is necessary to know what's going on. Knives Out is perfect because it really, it gives you all the pieces and then it does a great job explaining all the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Brick is way, it's almost more esoteric. It's not quite in, it's, Knives Out is zany and goofy and fun and very stylized. Brick is less fun, but almost just as stylized in a way. And
I think it's very stylized.
I think part of the problem is for a good amount of it, it takes itself very seriously,
mm-hmm.
and it makes it very hard to empathize with the characters. I didn't really like Brendan for a while because it was just like, this guy is so cool. Can he just beat up everybody?
Yeah, like, he's like a ninja.
The skinny little kid beating up football players and things like that. I was like, what is going on? This is ridiculous. And I was okay with it because it's fun to watch Joseph Gordon-Levitt beat up people. But I was kind of like, I don't get this guy. Am I supposed to like him? Are these real characters or is it just archetypes? And for a while, it is just archetypes. You have like the femme fatale. You have the detective.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's kind of stale in the beginning. Like I understood he put it in a high school environment in LA in a modern day setting, but it was still kind of a hard-boiled detective story. And But it took a little bit to find the rhythm.
Yeah. But it's one of those movies that once it finds its rhythm, for me, it feels like, oh, it was there all along for some reason. Like, even if it wasn't, it's just, it felt that way to me when I first saw it.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that this feels like a movie I'll need to see again.
Yeah. Oh, like a couple times. And honestly, even subtitle it. Truthfully.
I'm going to have to. I'm not a big fan of subtitling movies.
No, but there's some stuff that... It is. Might be.
I'm not kidding. It's indecipherable. There was a point near the end when he's explaining to the girl, like, I know what really happened, and I know how you were involved, where there was about a 5 or 10 second period where I was like, I don't know what you're saying. I do not know what either of these characters
are saying.
Well,
there was a point in the movie where I had to make sure you heard a certain scene.
Yeah.
Because
I
was
like,
hey, hold on, honey. Did you get that? Because it's important. It's pivotal.
Yeah. I don't typically, I'm not one of those people who really loves, I do love a twisty, turny plot. Okay. I like that stuff. I'm not the type of person who really latches on when a movie is like, all right, we are providing you with a lot of specific details that you're going to have to pay attention to and understand. I tend to, especially the first time I'm watching a movie, latch on to tone, to the feel of it, to the characters. It's a more, it's a less tangible thing. I'm usually just feeling out the rhythm of the movie. So the fact that the movie is like, here are all these bits and pieces you need to pay attention to understand. At a certain point, I was like, I kind of know what's happening, but I don't really. So I'm just, now that I'm kind of on the movie's wavelength, I'm just going to ride with it and just sort of go wherever.
I know. I could do a whole episode just saying, so what do you think happened, Sean? And just like.
Yeah. I had to read the plot description on Wikipedia before we started recording just to get my, to wrap my head around any of it.
Yeah. It's a lot.
Just to get it. But no, I think what's very clear from the get-go, even if I hadn't ended up liking the movie, there was no doubt in my mind that I could see why people latched on to it. I could see why people were immediately like, oh, this Rian Johnson guy, we better pay attention to him. And it's such a confident debut. Like, his style feels so specific.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been, I don't know if I would have been like, yeah, let him write another screenplay. But like, at the same time, the dialogue's a little clunky, but it's also, it's hard. Whenever a movie is purposefully designed to be a certain way, you have to give it props for that. But then you also have to acknowledge the fact that it's like, okay, but by putting it in a contemporary setting, in a very grounded, it's very grounded. He does get a little crazy with his camera moves and the editing. But for the most part, the movie is kind of in this grounded space. So I was like, you want me to care about this as if it's something I'm supposed to care about that really happens, but you keep throwing me for a loop with this very stylized dialogue. So it felt a little bit like it was not a struggle for him. It was very clearly a purposeful choice, but it was hard for me as an audience member to engage with it emotionally at first.
Yeah, I think he made the movie he wanted to make. That's what
Which
I
is
think.
Incredible.
Yeah, like, I don't think, I mean, obviously, like, who doesn't want people to like your movie, right? So I think it's a real testament that people were like, whoa. You know, because didn't it win something at Sundance as well?
It won an award. It won, I love, there's so many great consolation prizes at Sundance. No. I don't know if they still hand these out, but it won the special jury prize for originality of vision.
What does that mean?
I mean, I think the movie speaks for itself. You can definitely see the originality.
So he got
of the
vision. Brick Award for Brick.
He got the Brick Award for Brick, exactly. So
Well-deserved.
Well-deserved. But like, I think, like I said, the movie starts off very grounded. There are a couple weird dream sequences, like when he dreams of his girlfriend in the tunnel.
Yeah.
The visual, the opening shot, the visual of the tunnel, I was like, oh, already, this is such a striking.
I love the opening.
Yeah.
Like, where he's just staring at her body. It's like so, like,
in a great way to, part of me wonders how early in the process he came up with that. If that was like something he knew he wanted as the opening from the get-go. Because it felt like without that shot in the opening, the movie is kind of like, what is this about? What's going on?
You have to. I think it's pivotal. Yeah. Like 100%. And just the visual of her hand with the blue bracelets is so like, is iconic
the
right? Yeah. So I guess iconic works. And it's just such a strong visual of the scenes when she's alive and then the scenes when she's dead. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's powerful. I love it.
Yeah. And I think what's really incredible about it, as you pointed out, to have the confidence of this vision, and this is his first film, or his first feature film, I should say, because he'd done some shorts, but I don't think anything on this level. And I was reading about it, and he wrote the film out of film. How much do you know about the behind the scenes?
I know that it was shot at his high school.
Yeah.
Which is so cool.
Yes.
And I think his family helped fund the movie.
They did.
Or something like that.
So he
but
wrote,
that's all I really know.
Says he wrote the first draft in 1997, right after he graduated from USC.
Oh, so he was super young. What, 21?
Yeah,
something like
that? Very young. And it just took him some time to get it funded.
Yeah.
And eventually what happened is his family, they raised the money. They're in the construction business. So they were
that's
able
so
to kind
sweet.
Of pull together the money. They raised $450,000.
Yeah, that's not a little amount of money.
Part of me is like, the script, I mean, if I got the script, I would have, as an actor, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, this is very solid.
Yeah.
But there is this part of me that's like, doesn't it feel a little like, oh, your parents are like, yeah, go ahead, make your movie.
If you were Mr. and Mrs. Johnson and you read the script, what would you think? We'd be like, yeah, honey, you can make this movie.
Yeah.
Those are some supportive parents.
They really are.
Sure.
I want to hear more
like,
about
that
story.
What a beautiful career he has now, too. Like, how awesome is
they,
that?
They're like, yeah, you. We would love to see some of that Star Wars money, please. But I would love to hear more in detail because it's kind of vague. He estimated the minimal amount of money for which he could make the film and got his friends and family to
spend to
get the money to him.
Yeah.
I just want to know what that process was like.
But it made money.
Yeah.
I think.
It did.
It made
so
decent
for,
money
on a
$450,000
budget, it made $4 million.
Yeah, so not
so
bad.
That's a significant.
He got his money back.
If we're talking about, I don't know if this was the case back then, but a lot of times what you do now to calculate the profit is you double the budget to account for marketing costs and all that stuff. So let's say $900,000 total. So they made a profit of $3 million.
Yeah, so for a first outing and basically GoFundMe,
yes.
you know, or family funded me, that's awesome.
It's not bad at all.
Yeah.
I want to know how Joseph Gordon-Levitt got involved. There's not much information about that, but that's what fascinates me. He's great in the movie. This is, again, this is kind of... Because he wasn't really doing... He'd done Third Rock from the Sun, and you mentioned...
Mysterious Skin.
But for the most part, he was still trying...
And Ten Things. Well,
oh, 10 Things I Hate About You, yeah.
Previous?
That must have been. It was early 2000s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. So what's interesting about that is he was... I remember Brick... I don't know if we talked much about it, but I do remember Brick being a pivotal moment for him as well.
Yeah.
Because he had, up to that point, been in a lot of comedies. He'd been in kids' movies. Yeah. He'd been on a sitcom for years and years. Yeah. And Brick was like a departure for him, like trying to venture out into this realm of seriousness. And I hadn't heard of Mysterious Skin, but I had heard of Brick.
Yeah.
And I did know that that lent him some air of legitimacy as far as like, oh, he's not just like a funny kid who's in teen movies and on TV shows. He actually...
He's got chops.
Yep. Yeah. And he's great in the movie. It took me some time to get into the character, but once I did, I really, really liked it. But
I feel like he's just great in everything because I love him.
Yeah. Although I still find it hard to believe he can just beat everybody up.
He's pretty scrappy, though. Like, I mean, he's kicking shins and
it's true.
He's throwing people into... I mean, he fights dirty.
He does fight dirty.
So he's not like... I don't know. I can see it. He also got beat up quite a bit. It's not like he was just killing everyone. They were getting
him back. So he's coughing a lot. I didn't know. Did he get infected by...
I can only assume he had internal bleeding.
Okay.
That's just like, honestly, because look at him. I don't think they address it.
I did like that.
But he's like struggling the whole movie because he gets...
He does. He gets
lungs.
Beat up really, like, really bad in the movie. It's kind of funny.
It's great.
But, we were reading about how... I did not realize that Cowboy Bebop was such a major influence. And you mentioned one of the... It has to be Spike. Because Spike is the main character.
I've never seen it, so I can't say. But I knew that he...
If you see Spike's hair...
His physicality, I think, was
mirrored.
Because
Spike is kind of lanky, and he can...
Does he have glasses?
No.
Little, like, doesn't. John Lennon.
So, I don't know. Maybe spectacles. It wasn't Spike, but I want to say it was. I really... Knowing now that Cowboy Bebop was an influence, I feel that influence.
Yeah.
And not just... Because the visual style of the movie, I will, like... The other moment I knew I was like, okay, I think I'm going to like this movie after all, was the scene in the mall parking lot with the car. So first it's like he's getting beat up and then the car drives off and then it comes back at him. The editing and the way it's shot and the kinetic energy of it is so...
It's jarring.
It's very jarring, but it's also very like exciting.
Yeah.
Like it's very like, I was like, okay, I like this. And then it kind of... It keeps that up because then he's brought to the Penn's house and he's in the basement. And I remember the editing when he's like, oh yeah, I know exactly where you are. And he lists off the address and the way he cuts it in rhythm to the way he recites the address. I remember thinking like, this is cool. I like this. I like this a lot. And I have a specific note. Like I said, the movie gets looser as it goes along.
Yeah.
It's almost like he was, I don't know how they shot it, if they shot it in order or not, but it almost feels a little bit more like he finds his confidence and gets a little more comfortable with himself as a director.
Do you think that's a reflection of the directing, or do you think it's intentional, though?
It's got to be intentional.
Yeah.
He is...
Because this movie feels incredibly intentional. Like, nothing happens without a reason. Nothing.
It's got to be. Yeah. And just listening to him talk about films and, like, films that he's made later on, I think he had a very confident vision. I just don't, it feels like it takes a little bit too long to find its rhythm. The mystery itself.
Did you grasp it?
Yes. Somewhere. So the girlfriend was killed.
Mm-hmm, Emily.
He finds the girlfriend and she was involved with this like.
Yeah.
I don't know why that was. The seedy underground of this high school.
Yeah.
Which is just like a bunch of like gangs.
Yep.
Drug dealing gangs. It's like kind of West Side Story vibes minus the snapping and the singing, but like very much like when they bring him down into the basement again, I was like, okay, this movie is now off its rocker and I'm more of a fan.
I'm here for it.
But the pen, he's kind of, like you said, he's sort of the kingpin.
Mm-hmm.
And then what's the other guy's name? Tug?
Tug.
Is
Tug's wife beater guy.
Right. And he had a relationship with Emily.
So he... Yes.
There's like a
He was involved with Emily after Brandon.
Which we don't find out till later in the movie.
Right.
And then it turns out that maybe even more people were involved.
Yeah,
with
so
Emily.
Dode, I don't know if he was involved or he just loved her. I've never really...
Yeah, Dode, who it's revealed later in the movie, she is pregnant or was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And there's confusion as to whose kid it was.
It's everybody's child. It's
everybody's kid. Yeah. And then there's even the ambiguous ending of what she whispers to him. And
yeah.
I did like his line where he's like, what did she whispered to you, and he said she called me a dirty word or whatever it is. I loved that line. But it's like a very classic kind of noir detective story.
Yeah.
Everyone's hands are dirty. Everyone's a suspect. Everyone's done something wrong and nobody gets away. I think the biggest, the struggle I had was figuring out the brick itself, like where that factored in, how it factored in, what was poisoned, what was it like, were they all poisoned, who poisoned it, like why did, who stole it, who returned it, that's the thing, little details like that. I tend to like, I like to get swept up in the mood of the movie and plot intricacies, especially when you get into so many nitty gritty details like that, I start to like tune out, and then I'm like, oh, I probably should have been paying attention.
Well, and I think those are things I picked up later on as well. Because of my first viewing, I was just so like wrapped up and just along for the ride, just pure like adrenaline. Here we go. But I think after a couple of viewings, I kind of got all the plot points, you know? But basically, Laura is the mastermind, the girl at the end, short hair.
Right.
So she convinces Emily to steal the brick. Okay. And then she convinces Emily to tell Tug it's his child, knowing that Tug would go off and kill Emily. Because basically she stole the brick and then the
So she frames Emily.
Yeah, the pin starts freaking out and then she basically cut it to steal, you know, because a brick is like pure heroin. Mm-hmm. That's so that brick can last them forever. They can deal off it.
See,
so
I didn't know a brick was a thing.
You gotta learn about drugs first.
All right, here we go, kids. Get ready. Pull up a chair.
So she steals from this brick, this pure heroin, and she cuts it. But I don't know if she cut it bad on purpose or not. I would assume not because that tipped everyone off, right? So she cut it. It killed this other guy. So then she starts panicking. And then she brings in sweet Emily. And, you know, she kind of gets her under her spell. And she's like, you know, I don't know. It's just she's a horrible, horrible human.
Mm-hmm. And but she's so cute.
Doesn't matter.
That little
pixie
haircut.
She's going down at the end.
She was in Heroes, too. I feel like for some reason.
That's another strike against her.
Yeah, for some reason. I remember seeing her in Heroes. And I kept thinking, I was like, did I like her in Heroes or did I not like
her
in
Heroes? Was she a hero or a villain?
I don't know. Gosh.
Must
I don't
rewatch
even, I don't understand Brick. I don't understand Heroes. Clearly, I just don't understand plots in movies or TV shows in general.
But she basically got everybody killed is all you need to know.
Okay.
She like orchestrated the whole thing just to cover up the fact that she stole
but
this
JGL
heroin.
Caught her.
He caught her.
But
and he turned
was,
her in
he was won over
VP.
By her womanly wiles.
For like a
they
hot
had,
second.
They had a little kiss. And then it cuts to black. I don't know. And then she's smoking a cigarette.
Whatever.
That's like classic.
He's too smart for that. He knew what he was doing the whole time.
Well, here's something interesting I read. Apparently, in the original cut of the film, the next shot after it cuts to black is her putting her shirt back on. And she's got a bare back, suggesting that they did sleep together.
Well, if it didn't but make it into the movie.
Ryan Johnson took it out because he wanted to make it a little more ambiguous. But even he's like, I don't know. Maybe I should have left it in.
Interesting.
So. But at the end,
sometimes you have to sleep with your enemies to get the truth.
That's right. He knew what
he was
doing.
We're giving the children great life lessons.
This is great. I hope all the kids out there go watch Brick and they all are just as confused as I am. But watching it for you, what are the things that really like work for you or what really were you able to admire the film technique, the filming technique, or were you more just kind of like, I love these actors and I love kind of the plot of it and the because you were saying you love that kind of story.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
so
I do.
Was that,
I already went into it like adoring it. But as far as visual storytelling, I think it's super powerful and the music is awesome. Like, I don't
I
know.
Loved
I just
the music.
Love the music. It keeps you with the beat of the film.
I read that was his brother.
I think it's his cousin.
His cousin.
It's someone really. I'm pretty sure it's a cousin.
Nathan Johnson. Okay.
But I just think it's brilliant. And I think what's cool about this movie
that is his first musical score too.
Really?
And then he's done not only has he done practically all of Rian Johnson's films, but he also did Don John.
Really?
Joseph Gordon-Levitt's movie.
Oh.
How cool is that?
Well, they're probably all friends.
I mean, besties.
That's
yeah.
That's super cool. But I think what I love about this movie is that even if you're not getting every bit of dialogue, if you pay attention to the scenes and the visual cues and everything, I feel like you can pick up on a lot of the movie.
Totally.
And I think that's so much credit to the directing and the story. The fact that the dialogue is intense and it's strange and like you basically need subtitles and then you need a dictionary, right?
It reminded me of watching The Witch.
Yeah.
Robert Eggers' The Witch.
Yeah.
That's what it made me think of.
Yeah.
But with this one, I never understood it. Whereas The Witch, I was like, okay, well now it's terrifying things
are
happening.
I would love for you to watch it again at some, like give it some space, let it breathe and like watch it again and see what you pick up on.
I would love to do that too. Yeah. Again, like you said,
maybe you can do another like follow up at some point.
Yeah. The confidence and the singularity of the vision is what holds the movie up.
Yeah.
And like the performances are solid. Like some of them are better than others. JGL is great. But I think just watching it from a stylistic perspective, I think Johnson really hit the beats he was going for. And that's what makes the movie work regardless. I think the screenplay is really good. It gets the job done. But I think especially if I had seen this at Sundance back then, I think I would have been more impressed with like the style of it versus the actual script and the actual characters. Those things are so important for me. And I think that's probably why I didn't necessarily love the movie, because it was, it's so stylized that it's not real characters. It's just kind of archetypes. And it's a little bit more, I feel like he set out to make something that paid homage to these detective stories that he loved so much. And he put it in an interesting framework, like with high school. But at the same time, I don't have that emotional connection necessarily that I tend to desire when I'm watching any movie, really.
Yeah, I can see that.
But do you get that? Do you have an emotional connection to the film?
Like, yeah, I do.
What do you connect to?
I think it was also just a point in my life when I watched this. I was a lot younger, and I was really getting into movies, and this was like a movie that gripped me completely, where I was like, I can't look away. I don't know if I like it or if I don't. But then by kind of like similar to your response, where you hit a point and everything just felt like it fell into place. And I was like, oh, I've been understanding it the whole time.
Yeah.
It just took me a couple, viewings to get it. But then I also really love the cast. So
the cast is very,
that didn't
they're
hurt
very strong.
At all.
And I think, I'll step back what I said a little bit. I think there is an emotional through line through Brendan's character.
Yeah.
I think because you do get a nice little, an emotional release when he finally breaks down.
Yeah.
When he's in bed with what's her name. But the movie, because the problem is the character, they're all in high school, but they're all behaving like they're in the 1920s, like in a detective story. So that's the disconnect. But I think the emotional beats ring true. And the fun of it rings true. Like the chase, the guy's chasing him down, like he slices him with a knife, chases him down, he takes off his shoes, and then he
it's very clever.
It's
chasing.
Cut so well, and the editing is superb, and the pacing of the scenes is superb. I was never bored by the movie.
No.
Like everything really, even as I was struggling to keep up with it, I was still like engaged with it, and just through the visual through the directing and everything.
Yeah, there's I can't remember if it's Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Rian Johnson, but at some point in an interview or something, they talk about the movie and they essentially say, like, yes, this isn't how high school was, but it's how high school felt. And like, I loved that.
Yeah.
I was just like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, obviously not to the extreme of what you see unfold, but you have like the loner and you have the cliques and you have just the seedy underbelly, and then I don't know, and then where are the parents, right?
Yeah,
like where are the teachers, where are the parents? But I think that kind of, at least for me, that reflected, yeah, you go through all the motions in high school, but you don't remember any of that. You remember the people, like your own age.
Yeah.
At least for me.
Yeah, I could see that.
But I always thought that was really cool.
But. I do like that a lot. I think that's a really good interpretation of it. And it's definitely very strongly, because as you said, this world is completely disconnected from the adult world.
For sure.
It's completely intentional. Like, there's no doubt that it is. It's like, is it successful? I don't know. If you're in tune with the movie, absolutely it is. But I can see how people could, like, I know Roger Ebert in his review was kind of like, it's just hard to get into because these characters aren't believable, so I can't connect, like, kind of like what I'm saying, though I don't know necessarily that it's something that is like, this breaks the movie and it's terrible.
Well, it's
not
also his world, right? So, like, who's to say what characters are and aren't believable if you build the world that way?
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point.
Like, so you're all wrong.
I think it's, you know what I think it is, though? I think it's the inconsistency of tone at the start is like, it's grounded and believable, but also very stylized. And then the film becomes more stylized as it goes on. Like, it becomes more cartoonish and more outlandish.
Yeah.
In a great way.
They do it straight, though. And I think that's so important. Because can you imagine if they leaned into the humor? It wouldn't have worked.
Is farcical the right word? It's not a parody. It's very sincerely, like I said, it's an homage to that kind of film.
Noir.
Yeah. That kind of story.
Yeah.
So I really like that. There are lots of great moments in this movie. Like foot chase scene, I loved the little weird, creepy dream sequences. I remember you telling me when we saw Last Jedi, and I was raving about the mirror sequence in the cave. I was like, I love that so much. And you're like, well, you should see Brick, because Brick is full of stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I was very happy to see that. Yes.
It's cool that you've gone backwards in his career.
Yeah, basically.
You know?
Well, Fly, the episode Fly of Breaking Bad 2 is very stylized and very weird and has some very interesting visual quirks and things like that that were outside the norm for a standard Breaking Bad episode. And Breaking Bad is already very stylized, but I remember thinking even then, like, oh yeah, this feels like somebody came in and added their own personal stamp to it. And you feel that all in Brick. But like I said, the confidence of the vision is insane. Like, that he came out of the gate swinging, and it doesn't feel, it feels right. It feels natural and organic, but it's fun and fresh. And I love, like, there's this amazing shot when the two guys, Tug and the Pin, are fighting.
Yeah.
And it's clear, like, Tug's about to, like, murder him.
Mm-hmm.
And Brendan kind of backs out of the room.
Yeah.
And the light, there's a point where he's backing out and the light switches on. I don't know if, like, somebody hits the lamp and it cuts off and it's just darkness.
Ooh.
And he's kind of silhoughted against the dark room.
It's
such a beautiful shot.
That's cool.
There's a lot of moments in here where it's like, again, I think regardless of how you feel about the script, I think it's very clear. Like, it's like, this guy has a vision and he knows how to execute his vision extremely well. But do you have a particular favorite moment? Do you remember when the movie won you over? Were you won over from the beginning, or is there a moment that still stands out to you now as one of your favorites?
You know, the argument that when they do the flashback of the argument between him and Emily, where he pushes her.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the scene where initially, I can't even remember where in the film it is, but
it's very close to the beginning.
Yeah. So, and when he was like, you know, you're the only thing I love.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, that was it.
Yeah.
That was it for me. So, like, what, 8
you're
minutes in? I was like,
it.
I'm in.
Yeah. I was nervous because I was I was like, this feels melodramatic. It's very, like, I was just like, I can't connect to this because it doesn't feel real.
Yeah.
And it felt very, again, felt very serious, like very self-serious. So I still wasn't into the movie. And I was like, this feels like it's trying so hard to be like, I'm feeling emotions and you're the only thing I've ever loved. And I'm like, that's such a...
I love that we have the opposite reaction.
I know, it's very
funny.
It just speaks to, our differing tastes, that it's like, for you, that's the moment that worked. And for me, the moment that works is when the film starts getting weird and quirky. It's like, that basically sums up our taste totally. But so that scene, and then is there anything else that stands out to you that really...
The Brain in particular, I just love. I love his character. And there's a lot of people that think the Brain is Brendan.
It's like a Fight Club situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I won't say any more in case I'm spoiling Fight Club, but I guess I kind of am.
You already did.
Yeah, sort of. Sorry.
But yeah, there's a lot of people that kind of have that theory. And I think, I don't know if Johnson has, I think he's just aloof about it.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. But great. I just enjoy that character a lot. As far as favorite scenes go, I mean, like any chase scene.
<I'm in. laughs> they're all great.
Or like, I mean, even the difference in footsteps where you hear how Brendan runs and you hear how
it's a brilliant, because I remember watching it and thinking like, oh, the footsteps, I do like that they're so pronounced.
Yeah.
But then it's purposeful because when he takes off his shoes, the footsteps are the key to that whole scene. And you realize like that's a brilliant thing for a first time filmmaker to play with.
A 21-year-old? Well, he wasn't 21.
I think he was like 30 or something.
He wrote it right out of film school, so who knows what it looked like. I'm sure there's many drafts, but
he's still a young first-time feature director.
Absolutely.
And it makes me even happier to watch this and know where his career has gone and how much success he's had. Because again, at the end of the day, what impresses me most about Rian Johnson is his character. Mm-hmm. And I watched, it's funny, just recently he's talking about the anatomy of a scene with Vanity Fair, talking about a scene from Knives Out, and the way he breaks down his scenes and the way he shoots it, not only are you just admiring, like, this guy is just brilliant. He's a great filmmaker. He knows exactly what he wants and exactly what he's doing, but he also knows how to tell a story visually. That's great. What really speaks to who he is as a person is the way he explains it. And it's not like, I'm so cool and look at what I came up with. It's like, hey, I want to invite everyone to understand why I did this. Mm-hmm. And he's like breaking down like sight lines or eye lines. Like basically when you're shooting like conversations and there are lots of people in a room where the character's eye line is looking, it's such a nightmare to shoot those scenes and get the right coverage so that when you edit it together, it looks appropriate. It's very hard to explain in words without visuals.
But I get the
way Johnson relishes explaining this stuff and the way you feel like you're a part of his success.
Yeah.
That's what makes The Last Jedi, I think, such a special movie. And I think it, as time goes by and people look back on this mess of a new trilogy, people are really going to look at The Last Jedi as this point where it's like a great filmmaker came in and did something unique and special with a major franchise, but also that he wanted everyone to be a part of the experience and to learn and to feel like they were taking that in. That's a really special thing. And that's a pretty incredible gift to have.
Yeah.
And I give him all the props in the world. And I wish him continued success.
I'm sure he'll have a very long and wonderful career.
I mean, Knives Out made how much money? Like, it's,
and we're getting a sequel.
We're getting a sequel to Knives Out. So, I mean, I'm very happy for him. But
it's funny that you just mentioned the eyeline thing, because he talks about, so when Brendan finds the body of Emily, his eyeline doesn't match up with her body, if you pay attention.
Hmm.
And it was purposeful, because he said that like he couldn't comprehend the horror that he was seeing, so he's looking way to the left.
Huh.
So the fact that you just said that, I was like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like, again, case in point.
But I think it speaks to the guy knew what he was doing. Even back then, he's commanding the frame and the sound. Everything is working in a way that speaks to the vision of Rian Johnson. And it's always, I mean, you have Stanley Kubrick, who's one of the greats, if not the greatest filmmaker of all time, but he's also kind of a little bit of a prick, a very super arrogant. So when you have a great filmmaker like Johnson, who can just be like humble about it and can also be excited to share his knowledge and to share his experience and to feel like you're part of that and to feel like you're being educated by that, like, that's really cool. And it's very exciting. And it makes you want to love the guy more.
Yeah.
And I do. I think he's great. I'm very happy I watched this. Would you say this is your favorite film of his?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
It's hard for me to pick.
You'll have to see it.
Knives Out might be my favorite film of his. But
well, so I haven't seen all of them. I haven't seen The Brothers Bloom.
Yeah, I haven't seen that.
I think I've seen the rest.
I think that's the only other one.
Yeah.
It's Looper and Knives Out and Star Wars and this. That's Brothers Bloom. We'll have to do that someday.
Yeah, that would be fun.
But do we have anything else we want to say about Brick? Anything else we need to add to the conversation that we haven't already said?
It's fascinating to watch Tug, if you see it a second time, knowing that he killed Emily.
Hmm.
Like his mannerisms, because, you know, he just seems like an angry guy.
Yeah.
It's all intentioned. It's like, I don't know if you remember the scene in the tunnel where he thinks he's about to be exposed by Dode, but Dode is actually going after Brendan, and that's why he kills Dode. because yeah. that's what, but he's twisting these weeds.
Yeah. Which I didn't. Yeah. Yeah.
You have to go. I'm telling you, we got to watch it again.
Oh, that's great.
Let's start right now. But there's so much when you like put all these pieces together. He's actually one of my favorite characters. Mm. I know he's despicable, but like just to watch him is fascinating. And yeah. you see every move that
What's
he makes.
The guy who plays him.
Oh, he's great.
What's his name?
I don't know if I've seen him in anything else, to be honest.
Yeah, I didn't recognize him. So Dode is, or not, is it Dode or Tug?
Tug is the...
Noah Fleiss.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, he's great. He's probably one of the... I'm just thinking of when Brendan first mentions Emily's name and he's like, no, who's that? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Like that,
yeah, but
it's
then
all...
immediately the pin is like, oh yeah, they used to ride together. Like 2 seconds later.
Right.
And you see Brendan kind of his eyes flick up and it's like
good.
You just start seeing...
It is a solid piece of work. So I guess final ratings. So there's a joke. There are a lot of birds and there are a lot of feet in this movie. And Rian Johnson said a good alternate title might have been Birds and Feet.
I love it.
So how many birds and feet would you give Brick on a scale of 1 to 5 with 5 being the highest?
Definitely 5 feet and definitely 5 birds.
Okay, great. I would say 3.5 birds and feet.
Not bad.
Yeah.
I think we can work
you up
to a 4.
I think we probably could. I think mm-hmm. the more I think about it, the more
just
I'll
need
enjoy
some more
it.
Viewings.
It's because the stylization takes away from connecting with the characters, and he gets much better. Like Knives Out, lots of stylized characters, but you also get a really strong emotional through line with what's her name, Ana de Armas,
yeah,
her character,
absolutely.
But I think it's something he gets better at, and the fact that he was the strong coming out of the gate.
I hope he casts
impressive.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt again.
Me too.
Since they haven't worked together since Looper.
I know.
Maybe
I hope so.
Maybe the sequel.
I think he was like a stormtrooper or something.
Was
in
he?
Last Jedi.
Okay. Well, I want some FaceTime.
Let's get some FaceTime. I understand. You can't, but you need some JG.
You know
face
how I
in
feel.
Your life. Yeah, I get it. I get it. But yeah, that's it. So thank you so much for introducing this movie to me. And where can people find you, should they so desire, if they want to seek you out on the social media?
Instagram with Love Alone. That's it.
And then I'm
Everything else is gone.
And I'm at Shondorman on Instagram. I'm at Yay Shondorman on Twitter, because apparently there's another Shondorman out there. But we would love to hear from you and your thoughts on Brick. We want to see where you fall on the spectrum. Let us know. And also, if you like what you're hearing, please feel free to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That is always greatly appreciated. It helps us out a lot. Thank you, Sarah, for coming back to the show. You should be on this. You should show up more often, I'd say.
It's been a while.
It's been a little while.
Yeah.
We'll get some more JGL movies on
oh,
the
yeah.
roster to entice you.
I'll be here every
you.
Week.
It'll be great.